Nikki Haley kicked off the week in New Hampshire for the Republican primaries against Donald Trump by flailing around and self-congratulating, you know, that second place finish she should be so proud of with a 12-point margin between them. They're continuing to throw donor class money around like a financial chimp in a beat-off contest with votes from undercover Democrats registering as Republicans.
I want to congratulate Donald Trump on his victory tonight. He earned it, and I want to acknowledge that. Now, you've all heard the chatter among the political class. They're falling all over themselves, saying this race is over.
It's not over!
Well, I have news for all of them. New Hampshire is first in the nation. It is not the last in the nation.
Yeah, she's going to keep in the race, even though she still couldn't pull a decisive victory, even enough to close the gap. Speaking of undercover and beaten off, James O'Keefe and his undercover crew, his investigative reporters, finally confirmed what we all knew and what we all thought and what former Representative Madison Cawthorn claimed was happening in D.C., that the D.C. politicians are having sex parties and using them to blackmail others into voting for things they probably wouldn't vote for. Very Jeffrey Epstein-esque.
Dude, that kissed the crack of my ass. There's a lot of things that I do hear, and there's a lot of things that I see with my own eyes. Madison Cawthorn, one line news. That man in a wheelchair, that video that came out with the guy and sending off the building in the hearing room.
Oh yes, I saw that.
Okay,
yeah.
The guy was blackmailed.
He was blackmailed?
3 months.
Whoa.
So most members, they actually have spouses that are married. They have affairs with other council people, congress people, congress members in office. And they have like parties and stuff.
Like you're talking about sex parties.
Yeah, they...
Whoa.
Wants to talk a lot.
So these parties are like, it gets hot and heavy.
Yeah. It's like an in-house thing. If you know, you know. If you don't, you don't. But 9 out of 10 times, everybody in there knows. But they actually, that is a fact. They actually do have these parties.
Does that happen a lot? Like people do something sexual and they blackmail? Have you seen that?
So it happens every now and then.
But they get blackmailed.
Exactly.
Holy yikes. So note to self, when you're on the tour of the White House, make sure to leave the kids at home, bring lots of Purell, penicillin, and get that hepatitis shot. I've already had to almost claw my eyes out again after seeing post of that congressional aide video of him videoing himself getting his rusty sheriff's badge buffed by his BFF. Seemed like there's a lot of swingers in the D.C. metro area. And the media wants us to be swingers, too. Many stories out there making the rounds, news headlines, all on this new trend in relationships, polyamory. Listen to this headline from the New Yorker. Polyamory, a practical guide for curious couples. The New York Times, how a polyamorous mom had a big sexual adventure and found herself. In her memoir, More, Molly Roden Winter recounts the highs and lows of juggling an open marriage with work and childcare. And this from USA Today. Swingers want you to know it's not a secret. Swinging is not just about sex.
Okay.
Sounds great on paper. Hey, I get to have 5 wives. Well, I for one can't wait to get 5 different separate honey-do lists on my day off. The nagging will never end. It'll probably continue in perpetuity. And all of this award-winning journalism eventually leads to an empty LA Times newsroom. Yeah, there's a bunch of layoffs that happen in the news industry, and we've had BuzzFeed News go out of business and in their news division. Sports Illustrated just laid off its staff. The Wrap wrote, chaos, fury, engulf Los Angeles Times in historic cuts to newsroom. The Daily News Union tweeted, breaking, walk out, defend the Daily News, to which somebody said, there will be lies if you're not at work, and more lies if you are at work, so there's not much difference. And they're not wrong. Taylor Lorenz, the overdramatic, neurotic millennial journalist, had a lot of thoughts on this.
The entire journalism industry is basically in a free fall. Today, the Los Angeles Times laid off 115 employees. They wiped out their entire DC bureau in an election year. They laid off pretty much all of their sports teams. They killed their entire tech and business section. They laid off breaking news writers, social media editors. The list goes on. But what's really dark is this is just the latest in months and months and months of layoffs in the media industry. In fact, tens of thousands of journalists have been laid off in the past year. Major media companies like BuzzFeed News have completely shuttered their news operations. Time Magazine also just laid off a ton of people, and Sports Illustrated basically shut down last week. Pretty much the entire digital media ecosystem that myself and a lot of other millennial journalists came up in has been completely hollowed out. And it's not just digital media sites. Local news has been obliterated. The newspaper industry is cratering. Radio is essentially dead, aside from NPR, which has been gutted. Meanwhile, hundreds of workers at Condé Nast, the parent company of pretty much every major magazine from GQ to Vogue to The New Yorker to Vanity Fair, are on strike because they're also facing impending layoffs. Even mainstream national media outlets owned by billionaires like The Washington Post, where I work, and The Atlantic, where I used to work, have done layoffs. If you're a young journalist today, there's almost no on-ramp to traditional journalism. Even if you do get a job, journalists' salaries have been stagnant and even declined. And by the way, we don't make that much to begin with. I don't think people understand how bad the world would be without journalists.
Quote, I don't think people will understand how bad the world would be without journalists. Yeah, we wouldn't get headlines like this. Remember the congressional aide we were just talking about getting pounded out? Listen to these headlines about these firefighting journalists, what they thought about that situation and the framing that they provided. Fired for his act of love in the Senate. Aiden, I don't even know how to pronounce his last name, Sierpaski's act was symbolic and brave because in a world of hate, displays of love are rebellious. We shouldn't bend a party that hates us. We must do the opposite. And let's read some other great headlines that were written from Rolling Stone. How social distancing could lead to a spike in white nationalism. From Food and Wine, what does queer food mean? Is it cuisine? Is it a feeling, a movement? The idea is as big and varied as the queer community itself. Today, we launched a series exploring a wide range of perspectives on the topic. From The Guardian, upward thrusting buildings ejaculating into the sky. Do cities have to be so sexist? The Independent Opinion, what the white supremacist roots of biological sex reveal about transphobic feminism. The extreme right has a new hobby and it's terrifying. Hate groups are getting into books. Hate body odor? You're more likely to have right-wing views. Why damaging property isn't the same as violence? CNN, black newborn babies in the U.S. are more likely to survive childbirth if they're cared for by black doctors, but three times more likely to die when looked at by white doctors, study finds. The New Yorker, the case for not being born. The antinatalist philosopher David Bentner argues that it would be better if no one had children ever again. That's a real headline. And they wonder why we don't really care that they're getting laid off. Los Angeles Times, how white and affluent drivers are polluting the air breathed by LA's people of color. Also Los Angeles Times, column, mocking anti-vaxxers' COVID deaths is ghoulish, yes, but may be necessary. This is why your newsrooms are empty. And they're still out there trying to hold up the dementia patient-in-chief, the president corn pop kid sniffer, the Chinese foreign agent, Joe Biden.
Donald Trump, a valuable lesson. Don't mess with the minimum American unless you want to get the benefit.
The beer brewed here, it is used to make the brew beer in this final. Oh, Earth Rider, thanks for the Great Lakes. I wonder what it's called.
The blood of liberty. The tree of liberty is watered with the blood of patriots. Well, guess what, man? I didn't see a whole lot of patriots that are out there walking around making sure that we have these weapons. Well, and if you really want to worry about the government, you need an F-16.
I've got a 12-gauge, a shotgun, and my son has a gun with cocaine on the holster, even though his 4473 says he's never done drugs, and there's a deer wearing Kevlar and flying F-16s. That idiot, I mean, listen to him stumble through all his words, and he uses the same tropes all the time. The deer with the Kevlar, the F-16s,
It's crazy with this guy. And he had his DOJ decide to sue the state of Texas, who was taking control of its borders because of the invasion of illegals just flooding across. They added more razor wire to impede the invasion, and, you know, the Supreme Court said, well, you know, the government can take away the razor wire. And, you know, this is just another chapter in Biden administration aiding and abetting the invasion from the south.
Texas officials say they are going to hold the line and double down on their operations inside Shelby Park. Actually, right now we're witnessing Texas officials installing even more of that razor wire and anti-climbing fencing. Now, the reason why they're installing some of that razor wire and fencing on top of the shipping containers is we have witnessed several migrants going on top of the shipping containers and entering Shelby Park illegally that way. Texas officials say they're going to continue to beef up security here. As of right now, federal agents are still not allowed in Shelby Park. We're going to take a look at the scene over here. We're actually witnessing right now migrants that have actually been blocked by that razor wire. They say they've been here for at least 2 days. Here we have three migrants from Venezuela who cannot enter Shelby Park illegally. So this is exactly what the state of Texas is trying to do, is block any migrants from entering illegally. And because Border Patrol agents are not allowed in Shelby Park, they have no access to this wire and cannot cut any of this wire. So this is the current scenes right now. Texas officials doubling down. And this is the latest update on the border showdown between the White House and the state of Texas.
Razor wire everywhere. And it looks as though Governor Abbott down there in Texas has actually invoke the invasion clause of the U.S. Constitution in federal court. So those squishy Republicans in the Texas state legislature that tried to oust Ken Paxton under the direction of Joe Biden, who are now backing Nikki Haley, all of them, you kind of made a mistake there because you pissed off the sleeping giant, and Ken Paxton is going to make sure the hammer comes down. Other states are standing in solidarity with Texas. Here's my own state's very own Glenn Youngkin here in Virginia. Glenn Youngkin says Virginia stands with Texas. Greg Abbott is doing the job Joe Biden and his border czar refused to do to secure our border. The Biden administration has turned every state into a border state. We must stop the flow of fentanyl, save lives, and secure our southern border. Governor Kevin Stitt, Oklahoma stands with Texas. You also had Kristi Noem. It's exactly right to invoke Texas constitutional authority to defend itself. The Biden administration has created a national security crisis and put Americans in danger. Their failure is an unconstitutional dereliction of duty. South Dakota has been proud to stand with Texas. Ron DeSantis in Florida, he basically said, if the Constitution really makes states powerless to defend themselves against an invasion, it would have been ratified in the first place, and Texas would have never joined the union when it did. Texas is upholding the law while Biden is flouting it. Florida will keep assisting Texas, and all types of aid is coming. Tons of states have jumped in on this. In fact, the Alabama governor has just chimed in and said they're jumping on this. We also had Donald Trump making a statement. When I was president, we had the most secure border in history. Joe Biden has surrendered our border and is aiding and abetting a massive invasion of millions of illegal immigrants into the United States instead of fighting to protect our country from its onslaught. Biden is unbelievably fighting to tie the hands of Governor Abbott and the state of Texas so that the invasion continues unchecked. In the face of this national security, public safety, and public health catastrophe, Texas has rightly invoked the invasion clause of the Constitution and must be given full support to repel the invasion. We encourage all willing states to deploy their guards to Texas to prevent the entry of illegals and to remove them back across the border. All Americans should support the common sense measures by Texas authorities to protect the safety, security, and sovereignty of Texas and of the American people. When I am president, on day one, instead of fighting Texas, I will work hand in hand with Governor Abbott and the other border states to stop the invasion, seal the border, and rapidly begin the largest domestic deportation operation in history. Those Biden have let in should not get comfortable because they will be going home. And that was my thing. I don't know what Biden thinks he's going to do with this. You know, you got to keep in mind, what other forces at work that would push a president to play chicken with the state of Texas and be responsible for allowing illegals to flood into the country, which is that subject itself is polling at least the top topic of interest and discussed at 78%, while also having the worst favorability ratings as a president during your term. There's zero way for Biden to walk out of this. And if he doubles down, it's because he's being coerced by outside forces. China, the World Economic Forum, I don't know. Those who are using this puppet that they've installed to collapse the country. Let's hear from Meatball Ron DeSanctimonious, as the Trump people like to call him, about his thoughts on the state's position on all of this craziness.
Biden is going after Texas, saying that they must remove fortifications from their border. They've put wire, they put things to keep people out. Biden saying you got to take that down to let people come in illegally, which is just crazy. And I remark that if the Constitution was originally understood to mean that a state could not protect itself against an invasion, that the federal government could force a state to allow an invasion, the Constitution would have never been ratified in the first place. Texas would have never joined the Union when it did. And if you look at Federalist 46, which Daniel Horowitz pointed out, James Madison talks about situations where federal encroachment can be mitigated by state action. So you have Texas here that's holding its ground. They have every right to fortify the border vis-a-vis an invasion, and that's Article 1, Section 10 of the Constitution. So they're in the right. You also have a situation where liberal jurisdictions over many, many years have been sanctuary jurisdictions against enforcing federal immigration law. So you'll have somebody who's a criminal alien, they will not be given over to ICE, and they will deliberately act to frustrate the laws on the books, and somehow that's viewed as okay. You have Texas, who's acting to enforce the laws on the books, to ensure that they have a secure state and that we have a secure country. So all of this is just nonsense what Biden's doing. Texas has every right to stand its ground. We've in Florida, we've been sending people to help for many years now because we understand it's not just a Texas issue, it's ultimately an American issue. And if we don't have sovereignty in this country, then we're not gonna be a country anymore. So they have every right to hold their ground, to stay the course. And Florida will continue to be there helping out every step of the way.
He's a good leader in Florida. Seems like he would have been a great leader nationally. Boys and girls, just like a COVID lockdown, you're about to get a resonating civics lesson in real time. It's the Adrian Slade Show.
The presidential motorcade has just passed through heavy crowds in downtown Dallas.
Destroying the media lies and dismantling the narratives. One story at a time. It's the Adrian Slade Show.
If you've ever really wanted to know what the global elites, those in seats of power, what they think about you, you can go to one individual, and he sums up the most extremist views. And the crazy part is, he's the one who has a direct ear to the head of the World Economic Forum, who are devising all these plans. And of course, you've heard me talk about him before. We've played clips of him before. It's Yuval Noah Harari. He is the homosexual professor from, I can't remember, a Jewish university. And he's also the right-hand man to Klaus Schwab. And so he's a giant atheist. He mocks God all the time. And he looks at individuals as just, you know, useless people. So listen to him talk about how AI is going to make the perfect Bible.
AI can create new ideas, can even write a new Bible. We, you know, throughout history, religions dreamt about having a book written by a superhuman intelligence, by a non-human entity. Every religion claims our book, all the other books of the other religions, they humans wrote them. But our book, no. It came from some superhuman intelligence. In a few years, there might be religions that are actually correct. That just think about a religion whose holy book is written by an AI. That could be a reality in a few years.
So obviously right there, he has no type of spirituality or any reverence for the Holy Bible or, you know, any sort of higher power. He thinks he's in control, and he thinks AI is going to allow him to do these things. He also talked a little bit about the surveillance, the rise in surveillance of populations in China and Israel. And it's funny because this is an older clip, and he's kind of talking about it like he's worried about it, but really what he's getting down to, and you'll hear later, is basically, well, we just need the right people to run it. Isn't that always the case with communism? Just the right people need to do it. It's never been done the right way, right? So, yeah, he goes on to talk about how people can be hacked and what that really means and how total surveillance is happening in certain areas of the globe.
And all you need in order to systematically hack millions of people is just their data. Mm-hmm. That to hack people means to know people better than they know themselves. Right. To somebody in San Francisco, in Beijing, knows you,
yeah.
knows more about you than you know about yourself, mm-hmm. about your medical condition, about your mental weaknesses, things that you did 5 years ago, 20 years ago, you completely forgot about them, they yeah. know it.
Right.
This is something we never faced before. Not even the KGB could do it.
Right.
And if we allow this kind of data to be accumulated by a few corporations or governments, the result will be really the end of democracy and the free market
yeah.
and the creation of new kinds of totalitarian regimes mm-hmm. or total surveillance regimes in which somebody knows you better and can therefore manipulate you. Mm-hmm. And can therefore predict mm-hmm. what everything you're going to do.
Yeah.
And we are already beginning to see the emergence of such total surveillance regimes yeah. in places like Xinjiang, in places like in my own home country in Israel, we have this big laboratory of surveillance called the Occupied Territories, mm-hmm. where you have 2.5 million guinea pigs of how to completely survey and control a population
yeah.
with very few soldiers. I mean, when you look at the numbers, it's amazing how few soldiers you need
yeah.
to control millions of people if you have their data.
And the surveillance state that he's speaking of in China, that's what they want to do here through digital currency. You know, they can track your purchases. If you're going to buy a gun, maybe they'll just disallow that. Or if you're going to buy bullets. Or, you know, maybe there's something that you're going to, you know, buy airplane tickets to the Stop the Steal rally. They can do that. And that's what they do in China. Listen to the president of the Federal Reserve Bank of Minneapolis, Neil Kosarki, and he talks about this. And actually, it's good to hear that we have somebody within some sort of level of Federal Reserve Bank who understands this.
Central bank digital currency. Do you think that that is something that you all should be looking into seriously? To what degree should you be looking into it seriously? Just what are your thoughts on CBDC?
I mean, as my colleagues at the Federal Reserve have talked about, we are examining it. I'll tell you, my personal bias is I'm pretty skeptical. I keep asking anybody at the Fed or outside of the Fed to explain to me what problem this is solving. I can send anybody in this room $5 with Venmo right now. Right? No, seriously. So what is it that a CBDC could do that Venmo can't do? And all I get is a bunch of hand waving. I get a bunch. Well, maybe it's better for financial inclusion. Maybe it's better for cross-border remittances. Maybe. Is there any evidence that it is? And, you know, they say, well, what about China? China's doing it. Well, I can see why China would do it. If they want to monitor every one of your transactions, you could do that with a central bank digital currency. You can't do that with Venmo. If you want to impose negative interest rates, you could do that with a central bank digital currency. You can't do that with Venmo. And if you want to directly tax customer accounts, you could do that with a central bank digital currency. You can't do that with Venmo. So I get why China would be interested. Why would the American people be for that?
Yeah, the American people wouldn't be for that at all. So you might say, well, he's just kind of giving you the landscape of what's happening in the world. Let's talk about his views of what's going to happen when AI takes away a lot of businesses and what's going to happen to these individuals. There's absolutely no sort of frame of reference of saying that people are unique and you know, godly formed creatures. He just looks at them as useless people that just give them drugs and video games.
All these useless people. Again, I think that the biggest question in economics and politics of the coming decades will be what to do with all these useless people.
And then the big political and economic question of the 21st century will be, what do we need humans for? Or at least, what do we need so many humans for?
Do you have an answer in the book?
At present, the best guess we have is keep them happy with drugs and computer games.
And we call this the metaverse.
What you guys do in here?
Pretty much everything that you would do in the real world.
Or at least, what do we need so many humans for?
Would constitute a new useless class.
when I say that these are useless humans, it's not from the viewpoint of their mother, of the wife, of the son.
Or at least, what do we need so many humans for?
First, we've got population. Now, the world today has 6.8 billion people. That's headed up to about 9 billion. Now, if we do a really great job on new vaccines, healthcare, reproductive health services, we could lower that by perhaps 10 or 15%.
Or at least, what do we need so many humans for?
Forget the conspiracy. Listen to our government agencies. These guys are telling the truth. You know, there's no conspiracy here, folks. Just right. Get your damn vaccine.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah, we'll just give you drugs and video games and take your damn vax, right? And you wonder, how can they treat people like that? Why would they just think people could just be live lab rats? That they can just be injected with crap and then they can just be put into a room where they can play video games and get high all day because they're useless people. It's because of their view of human rights. Listen to Yuval Harari's view of human rights. It's like the Bill of Rights doesn't exist. And without God, then there is no rights.
Systems are based on this idea, this belief in human rights. But human rights are just like heaven and like God. It's just a fictional story that we've invented and spread around. It may be a very nice story. It may be a very attractive story. We want to believe it. But it's just a story. It's not a reality. It is not a biological reality. Just as jellyfish and woodpeckers and ostriches have no rights, Homo sapiens have no rights also. Take a human, cut him open, look inside, you find their blood, and you find the heart and lungs and kidneys, but you don't find there any rights. The only place you find rights is in the fictional stories that humans have invented and spread around. And the same thing is also true in the political field. States and nations are also, like human rights, and like God, and like heaven, they too are just stories. A mountain is a reality. You can see it, you can touch it, you can even smell it. But Israel or the United States, they are just stories. Very powerful stories, stories we might want to believe very much, but still they are just stories. You can't really see the United States. You cannot touch it, you cannot smell it.
This is a freaking TED Talk. There are people in the crowd listening to this guy go on and on about there's no human rights. So yeah, you can be injected. There are no borders. So, you know, states don't exist. Sovereign countries don't exist. Israel, United States. That's why we're seeing the flood of people at the border that Texas is handling that we talked about earlier, where they put the barbed wire fence up. And actually, Lieutenant Governor said there was 300,000 pouring across in a day. After they put all the razor wire up, zero. Funny how that works. But this is why they look at people the way they do. You know, they're going to surveil, spy on you with the NSA, and they're going to inject you with this vaccine that causes myocarditis, and they knew it. But yet they did it anyways, and they tried to shame you, tried to mandate you into doing it. And we're going to cover some evidence here on the other side of the break to kind of show you that they knew it and that they're ignoring the adverse events that are occurring because of them.
This is Adrian Slade.
So you don't have any rights. You don't have any bodily autonomy, according to these people at Davos and according to some in the Biden administration, because they wanted to force these vaccines upon everybody. You wouldn't be able to go to work. They were going to use OSHA to enforce this. And it's funny because they knew. I mean, we've been telling everybody that the lockdowns were horrible. You can find old tweets of mine where I basically were calling it the medical secession of states from the union. That was under Trump. And then you can tell we were out there speaking the truth about vaccine injuries. You know, I don't see Damar Hamlin on the front lines on the NFL. He was vaccinated and then had his heart attack on the field. Tons of MLS soccer players did. It's an issue. And we were all banned or censored or, you know, shadow banned from passing the information along. Well, it looks as though the CDC knew, and they knew back in May of 2021. From the Epoch Times, email reveals why CDC didn't issue an alert on COVID vaccines and myocarditis. The nation's top public health agency didn't send an alert about a connection between COVID-19 vaccines and heart inflammation because officials were concerned they would cause panic, according to an email obtained by the Epoch Times. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention in 2021 drafted an alert about the risk of heart inflammation or myocarditis resulting from Pfizer, BioNTech, and Moderna COVID-19 vaccines. Officials prepared to release it to the public, taking steps including having the agency director review the language, and these internal documents show. The alert would have been sent through the CDC's Health Alert Action Network, which is called HAN, H-A-N, which goes to the state and local officials, as well as the doctors across the country. The alert was never sent. In the May 25th, 2021 email, exclusively obtained by the Epoch Times, a CDC official revealed why some of the officials were against sending the alert. Quote, "The pros and cons of an official HAN are what are the main discussions are right now," Dr. Sarah Oliver, the official, wrote in the missive. Quote, "I think it's likely to be a HAN since that is the CDC's primary method of communications to clinicians and public health departments, but people are, they don't want to appear alarmist either." Dr. Oliver was corresponding with an employee of either Pfizer or Moderna. The employee's name and email were redacted in the copy obtained by the Epoch Times. And Dr. Oliver didn't respond to a request for comment by Epoch Times. So if you pointed out that, you know, you can kind of take treatments if you got COVID, such as hydroxychloroquine early on, or ivermectin if you got further into the sickness, and you can battle the illness that way, you were looked at as, you know, like Joe Rogan. Oh, he's taking horse dewormer. Misinformation. You know, you talk about the vaccines and say they give you blood clots or myocarditis and different things. Oh, you're, you know, you're misinformation. But yet they knew in May of 2021, even while they were censoring people, and they just didn't tell anybody. And that's what makes things like this really frustrating. Listen to this. Dr. Mark Trozzi's license stripped for misinformation and criticizing COVID-19. The Ontario Physicians and Surgeons Discipline Tribunal issued a penalty decision totally revoking Dr. Mark Trozzi's medical license after ruling in October that he had committed acts of professional misconduct by spreading misinformation about COVID-19 science and making statements critical of COVID-19 public health policies and recommendations. Through his counsel, Michael Alexander, Dr. Trozzi announced today that he will exercise his statutory right to appeal the decision to the Ontario Divisional Court. In reaching its decision, the tribunal rejected the Supreme Court cases dating from 1939, which told that Canadians enjoy an absolute constitutional right to express minority opinions on any subject. This allowed the tribunal to, to rule that the college has the right to regulate the expression of its members in the name of public interest. The tribunal's ruling also rested on the prior discipline hearing decision, where the tribunal found that Dr. Trozzi had caused harm by spreading misinformation, even through expert witnesses for witnesses for the college failed to tender evidence that Dr. Trozzi's statements had caused harm to a patient or a member of public. So if you're out there telling people about COVID-19 and giving the truth about it, you might not have harmed anyone, but you're going to be penalized for it. But if you know that your vaccines are harming anyone and you just don't tell anybody, no problem for you. This is what we're dealing with. In support of the ruling, the tribunal also rejected a 41-page report Dr. Trozzi submitted in 2021 in which he defended himself against the college's initial allegations, citing 29 references from mainstream sources such as The Lancet, the New England Journal of Medicine, Public Health Ontario, and Statistics Canada. This was done without mentioning that the college's main expert witness, Dr. Andrew Gardam, had admitted on cross-examination during the discipline hearing that he had never attempted to refute Trozzi's report. When the pandemic was on the horizon in 2020, Dr. Trozzi, a university professor and 25-year ER veteran, played a leading role in preparing his ER faculty to deal with COVID patients. However, while the press was reporting in 2021 that the ER rooms were overwhelmed, Dr. Trazzi's ER room was virtually empty. Wondering how this could be, Dr. Trazzi called colleagues around Canada and the U.S. to inquire about their experiences and learned that their ER rooms were empty as well. As a result, Dr. Trazzi began studying COVID-19 science rigorously and soon discovered that the government's narrative regarding the virus was deeply flawed. He then quit his job, devoted himself full-time to exploring the truth about all things COVID, and dedicated it on his website. When a scientist friendly to the government's narrative alerted the College of Physicians to the site, Dr. Trazzi's heretical views, the college launched an investigation that resulted in prosecution and professional misconduct. Unbelievable. And that's all people did. People in the medical community, Peter McAuliffe, Pierre Corey, you know, Robert Malone, all of these doctors stepped up, Ryan Cole, and they were all looking into this because nothing made sense to them, and they were all penalized. Now, luckily, they banded together, but we're learning more and more that everything we knew about it was wrong, and we have people in media, we've got voters that are going, well, you know, we just didn't know, you know, we didn't know back then, and we just took precautions, and we were just figuring things out. A lot of us did know, and we were shunned, and we were told that we were crazy conspiracy theorists. We had our social media accounts banned, and people like this lost their freaking license. So yeah, COVID-19 accountability must happen, and I don't know if we're going to get that on the federal level, because Donald Trump is still saying Operation Warp Speed was a perfect success and that he didn't lock down the country, although he did. But we are seeing private citizens and organizations coming up against it. This is from Aaron Seary. CDC's COVID-19 V-Safe system received 7.8 million entries from 10 million users. CDC fought hard to hide them. Pleased to announce that in our lawsuit against CDC with co-counsel, the U.S. federal court ordered CDC to produce all entries over the next 12 months. This is something from Tracy Beans. Undercover DC is her website, and she put this up. Since the COVID products were placed in under EUA, the government has told us that they were safe and effective. When some doctors and members of the public began to suspect that that might not be the case, they turned to VAERS, the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System. The VAERS data was wildly concerning, to say the least, and it pushed up safety signals almost immediately. When word of that spread, the CDC took to discrediting its own system. It suggested that the VAERS, a voluntarily reporting system, captures only 1% of adverse events occurring generally. The website was created to make it easier to track the adverse events being voluntarily reported, given that the government was not transparent about what was occurring. In fact, as of November 3rd, 2,557,763 adverse events were reported. It's important to note that many doctors will not even report to VAERS for fears of retribution and because they just want to cover it up. Project Veritas did a whole thing on it. It's a time-consuming form to fill out. It takes forever to fill this thing out. But when the signal from VAERS couldn't be ignored anymore, the CDC lied about how the system worked, and then during a hearing in front of Congress, they lied some more. And then the CDC director, Rachel Lewinsky, stated that even when asked if a car accident death was captured in the VAERS system, she said, yes, it was. So another system was implemented to make it appear that the government was monitoring the adverse events after the COVID shot. This is V-Safe. As per the CDC, this is the premier system for tracking the safety of COVID-19 vaccines. In the app, people can download that allows people who got the shot to tell the CDC about any side effects they experience. But there's some problems. Quote, V-Safe, CDC's premier system for tracking the safety of COVID-19 vaccines, it is a smartphone-based program that allows vaccine recipients to tell the CDC about any side effects. But even the CDC says those symptoms just mean that the shot is working. So by that logic, it couldn't even pick up a safety signal. Approximately 10 million users downloaded the V-Safe app. And what's interesting is there was another way to track the safety of these novel shots, the free text field. This is where places. This is where a few places you could write your symptoms in, how you felt, other information, with a character limit. And the CDC called this health impact data. Also note that check the box data was only collected for the first week after vaccination. So these people had a system where you can report adverse events from any vaccine. And then once it was being collected for COVID, they basically shut that down and started a new one and then had predetermined symptoms. And no one ever picked those because it didn't fit with their actual symptoms, but they were able to write it in the box. And they said, you know, that stuff's working. So you have no human rights and you have no way to report the damages done by mandates upon your human rights for vaccines. You have no way to fight back against monuments like Thomas Jefferson's statue being removed because even though you voted, your president was installed and they just kind of did what they want. The bureaucracy just did what they want. And you have no way of stopping the border because the federal government wants to tell Texas to open it back up. This is a systematic dismantling of the country, and it needs to be turned around. And I don't know if just a singular election is going to make that happen, but we're going to have to shoot and try, and we're going to have to get our states involved. I'm Adrian Slade. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you guys next time.